This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Saturday, December 22nd, 2018. My gosh, where has this year gone? This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the cold Chicago suburbs. I want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. Thanks for joining me at republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment at Spingola.email. And if you inadvertently add an S at the end of comments or comment, it's okay because the person that helps me out technically says that he fixed it, and so if you say comment or comments at spingola.email, it'll be fine. I hope that you will visit the chat room, and you may find that at spingola.chatango.com. You may view our past, current, and future guest lineup at spingola.com. You will find a schedule all the way back to October 23rd, 2010, and that is the day I began broadcasting on RBN. We will take questions and comments in the third hour at 800-313-9443. My guests today are James C. Jenkins and William Law. Now, they do have a website, but there's nothing there, but it is at the cold shoulder of history.com. But you will find an immense amount of information in this book. It is, the book is called At the Cold Shoulder of History, The Chilling Story of a 21-year-old Navy hospital corpsman who stood at the shoulder of JFK during the Bethesda autopsy. This book is just, it's very comprehensive. It'll just knock you out. It's just amazing. It's well documented. It's an amazing, amazing book. And I'm just so thrilled to have these two gentlemen on my program. James Curtis Jenkins was born in 1943. He enlisted in the United States Navy, and he won a place at the Medical Technology School that was part of Bethesda Naval Hospital, where John F. Kennedy's body was taken the day of his assassination. Along with fellow students, he was asked to assist in the autopsy of Kennedy. Probably never anticipated any such event. William Law's decades of research on the Kennedy assassination has appeared in more than 30 books, including Douglas Horne's Inside the Assassination Books, Inside the Assassination Records Review Board. He has written, produced, directed, or consulted on documentaries and films like RFK, The Gathering, and Killing Kennedy. The book, as I said, gives an in-depth look at what happened in the aftermath of President John F. Kennedy's assassination. One of the only living participants in President Kennedy's autopsy now comes forward after almost 54 years of silence and speaks about what is just what really took place inside of the morgue at Bethesda Naval Hospital on the night of November 22, 1963. Jenkins gives a detailed account about the procedures performed on the president's remains. What he learned that night led him to believe there was a conspiracy in the murder of the 35th president of the United States and caused him to undertake his own personal journey into the labyrinth of the assassination. This is a must-read book, and I hope that the listeners will enjoy the information that they will appreciate the information that they received today, and that they will certainly purchase the book. James, William, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's an honor to have both of you on the program. And William, I see that you're on Skype, and you are on video. And fortunately for my audience and for everyone else, I am not on video. I'm just on audio. And because I didn't even, well, I did comb my hair today, but that's about it. So that's one thing about doing radio, is that you really don't have to look your best. You could do it in pajamas, which on occasion I've done. So anyway, welcome.
Well, it's fine. Either way, we can communicate.
That's wonderful. Okay. This book, I love James, I love what you were talking about early on in your childhood and how you happened to become interested in medicine. You lived in a very, very small town, and there was one doctor there, and you developed a relationship with him, and he was just an amazing person, and because of that, his influence, you thought about being a doctor, and like a lot of people, sometimes the money runs out before the desire to attend school, and so you did a pretty good thing by joining the U.S. Navy. And why did you join the Navy instead of, for instance, the Marine Corps or something else? I know the reason is stated in the book.
Well, basically, my dad was in the Navy during World War II. So when I had an opportunity to make a selection, I selected the Navy. The Navy also offered me more options as to pursue my medical ambitions.
Great.
When I joined the Navy, I joined as an aviation naval cadet, but ultimately became a hospital corpsman.
Right. Yeah, because you really had an interest in flying, but then you also had people, superior officers, who helped you along the way. And they recognized your talent. They recognized that you weren't intimidated by their position, and so they kind of helped you. They recognized somebody very special in you, and which I think is great. And of course, you never anticipated your participation in anything as significant or historical as the assassination and autopsy. It's amazing.
Never in my wildest dreams.
Right. Now,
would I have...
Go ahead.
No, I just said that would never have been anticipated in my wildest dreams. It was just kind of being in the right or wrong place at the right time.
Right. So anyway, you did join the Navy, and you had the opportunity to work in. Well, you were a corpsman. You were also you were on the base and you lived in the barracks for a while till you married, and you had the opportunity to, because you were living on a base and there were married people and who had children, that you also interacted with children. And I remember the one story that you tell, that this little four-year-old came in for a penicillin shot, which was very popular in those days, and he was just struggling and didn't want that injection in his buttocks, and you just couldn't handle it. And when he looked up at you with tears streaming down his face, and he said, "Be careful," that was all you could handle, right?
Yes. All I could do at that time was just put the syringe down and walk away.
Sure.
It was kind of stunning for his father and for the other corpsman that was in the room.
Yes.
It was memorable.
Sure. Almost. You had a heart. You have a heart. So, do you want to, you did get married and you lived on Swanson's chicken pot or pot pies, because, well, they don't pay a whole heck of a lot in any service, and particularly at that time. And you didn't anticipate getting married, but, well, sometimes it just happens that you fall in love, and that's what happened. You said that meeting her, like being at Bethesda Naval Hospital on the night of November 22nd, would change my life forever. And so you were married, and then you received orders to go to Bethesda. So tell us, and William, I don't mean to leave you out, but tell us, Chapter 4, oh my gosh, is amazing. And you have kept this information to yourself. Why haven't you come forward up until this point?
Well, actually, I never really, of course, I was given orders not to speak. And then after I left the service, I really was more intent on continuing my education and toward my goals. And as I tell people, friends of mine now that know me for a long time says, "Well, you never told me anything about this." And my comment to them is, "Well, if I had, would you have believed me?" And because there was no collaboration until the House Select Committee that I participated in this. And that was many years later. And the other thing I didn't really want to get involved in was, at the very beginning, there were a lot of things going along with this, and I really never was interested in the assassination, other than being, remorse that the president had died. But it just wasn't something that I wanted to get involved in. Mm-hmm. Kind of a cop-out, I'm sure, but it wasn't. There was too much controversy involved in it. And even today is the same. But I finally succumbed to William's insistence that I get involved. And I went to the 50th anniversary pretty much because William wanted me to, and William's a long-term good friend. So I did it, so that type. And then I was surprised guys out there, that there was so much interest and so much intensity and interest that they had from all the people. And they were, you know, I was also surprised by the fact that this wasn't just an interest of a small group of people in the U.S. I talked to people from Australia and Europe, from the Scandinavian countries and so forth. And I kind of felt a little guilty about the fact is that I hadn't, you know, I had kind of been selfish and not sharing the information that I had all those years. So I kind of went, I went home, had various people at the airport come up to me and talk to me and so forth. And so I flew back home, and then 2 years later, I went, again went with William to conferences in Dallas, and at that point in time, and William has always encouraged me, or really, sometimes I feel like he might have badgered me into getting involved in it. So I had met someone, a couple of people there at the conference that wanted to talk with me, and they began to answer some of the questions that I had about the appearances of what I saw and what I remember from the autopsy. And so at that time, I thought about it. I decided, well, maybe I should write all of this down. And I talked with William. I asked him for his help, and of course he was readily available and elated. So we began writing the book approximately 3 years ago. And since then, it's been, it's kind of, I've had, it's been kind of a fight within myself, because as I had written what I saw, what I participated in, and so forth, I've tried to stay within the people, interviews or talking with the people who were actually at morgue or at Bethesda. And that had piqued my interest outside the realm of the morgue, but I had resisted it because I didn't want to have, you know, it affect any of the memories that I have, considering the memories were 55-year-old memories. And
well,
I guess
it's amazing that your recall is so incredible that you were able to fill in or to write down the details. I was very impressed with the details in which you obviously knew exactly what you were talking about. And it was just overwhelming to me. And you talk about things that other people have not been able to talk about because they weren't there. And so many things. That assassination, I suppose the reason that assassination was so traumatic and influential is because, as you mentioned, people outside of this country were also affected, and that it changed the direction of many of the policies that the American government had. And it was just amazing to me. Your detail, it's just striking and incredible. Okay, we're going to a 3-minute break, and we will be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and my guests today are James C. Jenkins and William M. Law. William, thank you so much for encouraging James to write this book and for insisting that he go to Dallas with you to attend the conference. And I know that they have quite a sizable conference down there, and people attend from all over. So thank you for doing that. I remember reading Garrison's book, and I was very interested in the Kennedy assassination, and read as much as I could, and certainly watched the films that came out, and knew that it was definitely... Lee Harvey Oswald didn't have anything to do with it. And I recognized that right away from my reading and from the documentation and the things that I had read. But this book is really the icing on the cake as far as I'm concerned. So thank you for your participation and for the two of you for writing this incredible book. And of course, the name of the book is At the Cold Shoulder of History, The Chilling Story of a 21-year-old Navy Hospital Corpsman Who Stood at the Shoulder of JFK During the Bethesda Autopsy. So it is available at, of course, Amazon. And it's also available as a Kindle, so you can get it immediately. And I do have a link to it on my schedule page. But anyway, so after, James, after you attended this conference, then you rethought your position, rethought your situation, and decided that you would do this, that the two of you would work on this, and you would present this information that is essential. I really do. I think it's essential knowledge. It's like I said, it is the icing on the cake.
Well, first, let me thank you for your kind words about ethical shoals or history. You know, the trouble with people that are historical have had these run-ins with history because they were thrown into it. The trouble is in convincing them that they have something to say that other people might want to know. And I've known Jim now for well over 20 years, and it took a very long time for him to grasp that what he saw in that autopsy room just might have some interest to other people. And I think that when we did go to the 50th anniversary, I think Jim was rather shocked to receive the kind of reception that he got. There are people, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people all over the world that still care about what happened to John F. Kennedy. And Jim is one of the last people standing that was in the morgue that you can actually talk to. And so I was very gratified a few years ago when he called me and said, you know, I've talked to my wife and she feels I should do something for history. And I'd like to do a book so that I can set the record straight. Will you help me? Of course, I jumped at the chance immediately.
And I thank you for doing that. yes. So now, do you live close to each other or no?
Well, I'm in Oregon.
William's in Oregon. I'm in Alabama.
Okay. But you can certainly collaborate over the internet. As we have all learned, some of our best contacts and best friends, we have met through the internet. And so this is wonderful that you were able to collaborate on this. And I think that, yes, James, you do have a story to tell that nobody else can tell. So let's talk about the information in Chapter 4, which is you went to work, typically, and it was your first year at Bethesda, and you had classes, and then you got the news. And I think probably, like other people, we all remember where we were on that day, or we all remember where we were in 9/11. We all remember what we were doing, exactly where we were on these memorable occasions, these memorable situations. And I think it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. Everybody seemed to love JFK. And so it was a heartbreaking situation for the whole country. And it was a turning point in this country. The war in Vietnam escalated. There was all sorts of changes. It definitely changed the direction that the country was going. Wow. Commercial? Okay. We will be right back, and then let's talk about these details in Chapter 4. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guests today are James C. Jenkins and William M. Law. And before we get into the details. How did you happen to find a publisher? This was probably not a book that just any publisher would print or consider, correct?
Well, I
think we were fortunate.
Done... Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead. I think we were fortunate, and the fact is that the Trend Day Publishing, who had published several books for William, were very interested in the book and were willing to support it. Right out of the start, and they offered a lot of valuable information and so forth as to what we were doing. William is a published author and researcher, but I really have never even considered writing a book. But both the publisher and of course, William offered a lot of invaluable information. It allowed me to do this. So a lot of the accolades for this must go to the publisher and to Chris. The publisher that helped us immensely with this.
Great. Trinday does publish some fabulous books. And so that was good that you found each other. And it was good that, isn't it wonderful that the two of you, you said you'd been friends for 20 years. Isn't it wonderful that you became friends when you did, and that you were able to come to the conclusion that this was a good thing to do?
Let me set the stage a little bit.
Yes, go ahead.
I'd had a book published about 14 years ago called In the Eye of History, and that's the first time that I met Jim. My idea was to do a history of not so much the assassination, but the area that I was interested in. And that was the autopsy of President Kennedy, because I felt that if you could talk to the people that were actually in the room who performed the autopsy on the body, you could get their opinions, trained medical personnel. They could give you their idea of where the shots came from, what direction the shots came from, what did they feel about working on the body, what did it tell them. And so when I contacted Jim, and it seems like so very long ago now, he was kind enough to talk to me, and looking at some of my notes all these years later, I'd written down, feels the Warren Report was nothing but show.
Oh, definitely.
Things like that. But he was also very reluctant. I mean, I had interviewed other people that were in the autopsy room before I contacted Jim, and I'd read very little about him. There wasn't much information out there. There was a little, but not much. And so I would call him every once in a while. And finally, I worked up the courage to ask him if he would allow me to come see him. And I think what I so eloquently said was, you know, if you let me come out there and talk to you, I can get a really good price on an airline ticket. So he said, you can, huh? I said, yeah, I can. So he relented and let me fly out there. And, you know, I never do well the night before an interview. I'm excited and I'm nervous. And I showed up in the area where we were supposed to meet there at the hotel, and I got things set up. Now, I'd had this thing in my head where I told Jim that I wanted to do this book, and if he would talk to me, I would print his words exactly as he told them to me, and not put any spin on it, and not put my speculation into it, but just let him talk to me, because I'd never read a book before that just let one of these people live their story. It's always full of speculation and things like that. And I didn't want to read that. I wanted to do a book where it was kind of like a table talk. If you could sit down with Jim Jenkins and just ask him questions that you wanted to know, you'd want to do that. And so that's the way that I wanted to present this book. And I also wanted to film it for history. So I told him I was going to do all this before I showed up. Now, I had this little camera with me that I'd brought along, and I had a rough set of questions. But when we first met in the lobby, he called me up and said, I'm here. I went down to the lobby, and there he was looking at a picture on the wall. You know, Jim's a tall fella, and he was neatly dressed and had a shock of white hair and a beard, and he had his hands deep in his pockets, and he's looking at a picture that's hanging there. And he saw me, and he says, well, hello, William. And we shook hands, and we decided to go right next door to the restaurant that was attached to the hotel and have a Coke. So we sat down and started having a Coke, and Jim started talking to me about some of his experiences. And he said, you know, I was 19 or 20 years old when I found out my country was no better than a third world country. He said, I don't trust people, and I don't trust the government. And this was the start of it, meaning the Kennedy assassination. So wanting to keep it fresh, I said that, well, let's go up to the room so we can film it. Now, I'd had plans to film a little bit of, bit of it there in the room and then go out to the French Quarter or something. I had in my head that we were going to do this thing in a nice area of New Orleans. We're going to have a nice, leisurely lunch. We were really going to get to know each other. And Jim looks at me and he says, well, William, I'd just soon sit here without filming it. And I must have looked so crestfallen that he looked at me for about 10 seconds, but it seemed like an eternity. And looking at my face, he said, all right, William, I'll do it for you. So I said, great, let's go up into the room and film it. So we get up from the table and we get into the room and he says, you know, my wife is going to be back in 45 minutes. So now gone is my plans of the leisurely day in New Orleans, having a nice lunch. It was, I've got 45 minutes. And so the way I do an interview is I try to start out nice and slow and easy and get comfortable so they can get comfortable with me. And that all went out the window because I only had a limited amount of time. So I picked up the rough set of questions. I sat down and I just started asking Jim questions right off the bat and ask the question, get the answer. That was kind of how it went. And he stayed there for over 2 hours answering my question. And it was an amazing interview. And if you could see it, now, I've not shown it anywhere, but the tension for me was at least palpable while he was telling me things like the brain had, when he saw the brain and he had to infuse the president's brain, he had trouble getting the needles into the veins of the brain, the arteries of the brain, to infuse it. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, it looked like the arteries, the ends of the arteries and things had constricted a bit because it was dry on the ends. And I said, well, what does that mean to you? And he said, well, to me, that means the brain had been out of the head for some time. So when you hear things like that, it was really quite an interview, and people can read that in the book. But that was the first connection that I and Jim had, and then we just kept our relationship up over the years, and that's how this book was able to be produced.
Amazing, right? that part where he talks about not being able to do what should have been done. And the veins were dry and constricted. Right away, that caused him to question: was this really the president's brain? Was there two brains? And I go ahead, James.
Yeah, actually, that really wasn't the only thing. William kind of went through in a outline format. One of the things in 2015 that encouraged me to go ahead and think about writing this book was I had a meeting with a neurologist, and I guess people that are familiar with the assassination and follow it, the neurologist and Dr. Mantic, who is a pathologist with a PhD in physics that's been a researcher in this for years and years and years, they approached me at the meeting and wanted to sit and have a session with me. And I agreed to that. Later, William and I and Dr. Mantic and Dr. Chesser met, and we spent several hours together. And one of the things that was important to me was the appearance of the brain as it was handed by Dr. Humes to Dr. Boswell. It didn't seem to quite fit with what I was seeing with the damage to the skull and the
right.
Scalp and the head area. And the brain itself was unusual in the fact that the appearance of it didn't quite correlate with what we normally saw for the brains that we took at autopsy. The brain seemed to be smaller than you would anticipate by comparing it to this, you know, the present skull. And the appearance itself seemed to be kind of the convolutions in the brain, which are the they are usually raised and fairly uniform type thing. These were flattened. The gyri, which is the part of the convolutions of the brain, seemed to be flat and seemed to be wider than you would normally see. Also seemed to be shinier. It had more of a white, whitish tinge to it as to the gray that we normally saw. That to me was extremely unusual, and I had no rationale for it. So, and then of course, what William has alluded to is that when Dr. Boswell gave me the brain to turn upside down and infuse with the needles, the internal carotids had retracted and they were shriveled a little bit, and when you cut an artery, it springs back, it retracts a little bit, and eventually it'll try to close itself off. And I was having difficulty getting the needles in without the needle going through the side of the vessel.
And yet, supposedly they had just removed the brain from the president's skull, correct?
Well, that was. Yeah, they should have been. That was exactly what happened. You know, Dr. Humes had actually extended some of the fracture lines in the skull and some of the tears in the scalp. And at that point in time, he could spread the skull open and remove the brain without doing a normal skull cap, which is what we usually did. But during that process, he made a statement pretty much to himself, kind of an utterance of, well, the damn thing almost fell out in my hand. I didn't really think much of that. I just felt like, well, maybe the projectile or the bullet or whatever, a fragment or something had severed the brainstem. But when I turned it upside down and put it in the sling over the brain bucket to infuse, the brainstem looked like it had been cut from two different directions. Kind of like when you want to cut a tube or something, and you cut it from one side and then you cut it from the other side. You know, one side is always a little higher than the other. And that was the appearance that I saw at that time. But going through all of this, when I talked to Dr. Chesser, and Dr. Chesser and Dr. Mantic both had been able to get into the archives and view the photographs and the x-rays. And
yeah, there were three sets
Dr.
of x-rays.
Dr. Chesser, yes, they were.
Okay.
Dr. Chesser had wanted to talk to me about the brain. And he had some comments and observations about the photographs of the brains that he saw in the archives. And they were probably the first time that I really ever thought about a rational reason, I guess, for what I saw at autopsy. And then I began to work with Dr. Chesser, and it became obvious to me at that point in time that the brain that we had at autopsy probably was not the president's brain. And
wow.
Then, you know, over
and
the,
they
three,
changed
over
it
the 3 years, I really don't know. I know that the brain, or at least I saw enough evidence at the autopsy, that the brain had been removed and either replaced or substituted prior to the time that we received it at the Bethesda Moore co-autopsy. And over there, again, too, is that, you know, it actually adds credence to Lifton and Horn's conclusions that they had.
Right.
So, but that was pretty much.
We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back just momentarily. Okay, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guests are today James C. Jenkins and William M. Law, and they are the authors of this fabulous, fabulous book, At the Cold Shoulder of History, The Chilling Story of a 21-Year-Old Navy Hospital Corpsman Who Stood at the Shoulder of JFK During the Bethesda Autopsy. And I thank them very much for being on the program today and for writing the book. And what is so interesting about this is that you were able to, that the two doctors, the neurologist, and I think that's very amazing, that the neurologist and the other doctor were able to get into the archives, because there was a law that those archives were not to be opened until a particular time. But then there was a law, when was it, 1992 or something, that altered the ability of people to go into the archives and look this stuff up. Correct?
Well, the archives are still closed to basically the general public. I've been refused twice because I don't meet the criteria of the Kennedy's deed of a gift, under which the archives received the information. And it's... This deed of gift is actually, in my opinion, a mechanism to keep the average person or the general public from being able to use these. I made a request to the lawyer, the Kennedy lawyer, who supposedly controlled this, and was told by him that I did not meet the criteria set forth in the deed of gift. I also contacted my local congressman and senator, and he was unable to get me in. Also, he did get me a email address, and told me to to write an email addressing what I wanted to do and so forth, which I did, but that was to someone in the archives, and I've never, as of this date, which is several years later, have never received a reply to that. And other people have tried on my behalf to get me in, but we've been unsuccessful.
Wow. Interesting. So, but there was no law that was altered, because there was supposed to be like till 2050 or some ridiculous year that anybody... Yes. Anyway... So we'll be right back. Okay, be right back. Time to get a drink or whatever. Yeah.
Reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.